Those of you that see me speak before know that I like to jump around and run into the audience a fair lot, and you know, that kind of Gallagher type stuff. But I'll try to restrict myself to being at the podium. If I can get this to sit right. I don't care about that, Windows. Anyway, yes, my name is John Fink. I am the Digital Technologies Development Librarian at McMaster University. And my talk about Evergreen and Conifer, or how to amaze your friends and astound your enemies by building a union catalog on the cheap-ish. First off, if I have grammatical mistakes in my slides, please forgive me. I am an American and living in Canada, and sometimes I get a little schizophrenic as to what language set I should be using. I think mostly it's okay, though. See, I have catalog with a UE, but anyway. I've been thinking about ILSs for a very, very long time, mostly as an interested amateur. I started as a systems sort of a desktop grunt at Miami in 1995, and I started thinking about ILSs and how important they were and yet how much money they cost, and I am so cheap, so I get enraged when I have to spend a lot of money. Just to show you that nothing... Whoa. All right. Somehow my slides have vanished. All right. Anyway, I used to have a graphic right there showing, I don't know what happened to it, showing a Usenet post from me in 1996 that said, hey, I love Linux so much, why isn't there an OPAC on Linux that sort of proves to you that nothing is lost to the internet except possibly things are lost to slides. So, sorry about that. Some of this will be background, and I'm sorry about that, but mostly Evergreen has been done to death here, especially in other conferences, and if you were, in fact, bored by this, my apologies, but some people, I'm hoping I catch at least one or two that are uninitiated. What is Evergreen? It's an ILS, it's an integrated library system. I am going to try to explain acronyms, because one time I did give a speech, and someone didn't know what an ILS was. And I found out much later, and I felt horrified because I felt as though I was giving a talk and someone was completely flummoxed. As an ILS, it is scalable. A great many ILSs depend on one machine or a few machines, and they don't scale well to large consortial levels. It's built on open standards. Of course, as librarians, we're very, very interested in open standards, right? We like MARC and things like that. This is built on C and Perl and Postgres and things like that. It runs on stock hardware. A disadvantage to some ILSs in my past that I won't name is that they required you to buy expensive hardware along with their already expensive software. Well, we don't make you do that with Evergreen. And it's open source, okay, ad nauseum. Why isn't everyone everywhere using this? I don't know, why isn't everyone everywhere using this? I'm looking at most of you. Open source, okay, no... You know, some folks who are in a management situation, not myself generally, I'm pretty easy, but to say that, you know, if it's open source, well, then it's not backed by an official company and blah, blah, blah. Well, it has many, many, many different pieces, which means there's many, many, many places for it to break. Not so much now. It's better than it used to be as far as breakage goes. The install process is getting better. I say better because about this time last year in Access 07, was it Bill Erickson? I can't remember. Someone had made an install script that basically went through and did a whole bunch of prerequisites for you. But prior to that point, it was rather like pulling teeth. And I've been a Unix administrator for a long time now, and the only thing I can really compare it to is SendMail in about 1996. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with SendMail, but there's those O'Reilly books. It basically is a program that just delivers mail. That's all it does, email, just routes email. The O'Reilly book for it is it's the thickest one that I know of. And it was just terrible. Anyway, the install process is getting better than that, but new ways of doing things means a learning curve. It's a very different beast. It's a very different kind of software. So there's lots of little pieces to it. But you break the shell of it and you find magic, in my opinion. There's a point in which you break through and you realize, geez, this is a totally new way of doing things, but yet not completely totally new, and it's really, really something special. So this is my my diagram of the successful Evergreen installs. You can see there's a little eJabberD, and then we have C and Perl and OpenPOPAC and Surfshell. It's just my way of saying, gosh, this is complicated. And you can see the fifth-dimensional chaos matrix, which I think is a Perl module in CPAN, so you can look it up. But you knew that already, right? We've been talking ad nauseum about Evergreen, so... So what's Conifer, which hopefully most of you do not know about? It's a confederation of five institutions. It is McMaster, Laurentian, and Windsor. And McMaster, who, of course, the principal representative is me, and then Dan Scott for Laurentian, and Art Rhino, the dynamic Art Rhino out of Windsor, who is on strike at the moment, I think, although they may have voted it down. A tentative agreement. Isn't that great? Everyone applaud for Art Rhino. Right. Somehow he keeps coming up with excuses as to why he has to skip access, and I think this strike was engineered by him so he wouldn't have to come and talk. Then, recently, we got two more folks, Nozem, actually, I don't know how to pronounce it. Who knows what it is? And Algoma University in mid-2008. Algoma University, is anyone from Algoma here? I don't know. There aren't many people at Algoma at the moment. It is a new university in Sault Ste. Marie. It used to be a college, and it used to be associated with Laurentian, and now it's sort of its own little thing. And Nozem is a Northern Ontario School of Medicine, and it's sort of split between Laurentian and Lakehead. But nobody else, so don't ask. I don't know. Nobody else yet. And we have a single install, which is actually five machines, at Guelph. Is anyone from Guelph here? Anyone in Guelph? Oh, you from Guelph. Thank you, by proxy. And you're wondering, Guelph? Why Guelph? Guelph is not in this list. Guelph is a school in Ontario, right? But it's not in this list. Well, they were very, very kind to host our machines for us and have been extremely responsive when we say we need this done to this machine or that done to that machine. So if you have a project that you want to host somewhere, try asking Guelph. You know, well, don't tell them I told you that, because, Well, Conifer is not. It is not provincially comprehensive. That much is very obvious, right? We have this machine at Guelph, and we have these five guys, but there are a whole lot of other institutions in Ontario, some of which are probably in this room, right? Yeah. You know, U of T, whatever. So it's not comprehensive to the province. It's not official in any sort of OCL, Ontario Council of University Libraries type level. So there's no, it's really quite flat. There's no sort of overarching body that oversees us. And we're not our own separate entity. We don't have, you know, giant, lush and lavish, conifer-style, jacuzzis and buildings in downtown Toronto and all that stuff. We're really, we don't have any sort of separate entity. I'm from Ohio, and so occasionally I miss OhioLINK, which is a wonderful resource sharing scheme that's sort of like a patron-initiated, well, it's a lot of things, but what I miss about it in this context is it's a patron-initiated ILL. You say, okay, I want this book, and then it routes it automatically to you from some organization. And I remember borrowing lots of things from Cuyahoga County Public Library, and they had to have lended a ton of stuff out, and I imagine they regretted joining, because I'm sure they lended way out more than they got. Or operational. All right, so it's not working in the sort of sense that we would like it to work. And that's supposed to be May 2009. Of course, now you're asking yourself, but hey, why would any one of you, let alone all five of you, decide to ditch the ILS systems you have now, which are working pretty well, or at least decently, and jump into something completely unknown? Well, it's not unknown. And this is sort of my redundant slide. So examples of everything installs, Georgia Pines, which we of course know about, BC Sitka with 18, Michigan Library Consortium, and Grand Rapids just came up, I think, 3 days ago. Indiana, and of course UPEI, the madmen of, really, of the, the breakneck, where's Grant? Is he out there? Okay, he's just astonishing. I couldn't, anyway, more about that later. So it's proven, but at the moment it lacks what we would consider more academic features. Us as academic libraries have certain requirements that publics do not, like ACC, serials, reserves, batch import, export. These are due in with about version 2.0 later this year, and later I think is December. And other things like internationalization, a Z3950 server, better admin interface, and those come in 1.4, which is hopefully this month. So at the risk of sounding like this wonderful bearded gentleman, or worse, this wonderful bearded gentleman, which half the room will laugh at because they're terrible nerds and half the room will go, who's this guy? We are doing this because all of us, all three of us, and I can't really speak to Nozomi or Algoma, but at least the three initial, have in one form or another had proprietary software companies fail us in some major way, whether it's because the software or hardware is being end-of-life or migration costs to a new platform are exorbitant. And nowadays, we like to consider ourselves smart enough that we can take responsibility for our actions, for the operation development of our own software, which possibly in the past, not so much. But really, we're, and I should just say me, but probably lots of people are afraid of being told we can do something and then having it taken from us for no reason whatsoever other than they can. Or being locked into a platform that is dying a slow death due to corporate takeovers or an arbitrary technology shift of dependencies on these sort of outside agencies. Here's my TLDR slide. If you can't open it, you don't own it. And corollary, it owns you. So really, it's less a, hey, the software is free, woohoo, we're cheap, we don't have to pay for it kind of thing, and more of a, oh my God, we really need to take more interest in what this piece of software, long the central kernel of a library, is doing. Now, granted, when I started working in libraries in 95, it was really, really central, right? Everything, because you had print, and everybody came to the library to borrow books, and we didn't have databases except if you had them in big CD-ROM towers and things like that. And so it's become less important, in my opinion. We have a lot of databases, which are arguably more used, perhaps, than the catalog in a lot of instances, and we have a whole bunch of adjunct things, you know, Drupal instances serving whatever content we have. So the catalog is less essential, although I will say certainly important. And it's not cheap. There are hardware and opportunity costs involved. And by opportunity costs, I'm talking economically. As a young high schooler, I thought I would love to be an economist. I said, I don't know why. I'd love to be an economist. And so I studied a lot of economics. Then I went to college and decided, well, I don't really want to be an economist. So I became a creative writing major, of which I, yeah. But opportunity cost means you're working on something and it's costing you the ability to work on something else. So technically, my time is 50% for Evergreen. As Dan Scott will attest, within about the last 2 months or month and a half, it's been more like 20 or 10 because things have overtaken, but it's supposed to be set at 50. And that's 50% of time, theoretically, that I'm not doing something else. And Dan, poor Dan, at 80, a lot of time opportunity cost for him. There's some modicum of training. Any time you change a platform, even if you go from one revision of software to another revision of software, things that change and things that break and people that need to be trained on it or at least need to be assured that their sky is not falling on their heads. A lot of headache. But we have one advantage, us, and I just want to bring this up briefly. We're not changing our patron interface with this. So any reasonable discovery layer that you may think to build on it should work without too much difference. And in fact, I'm hoping our Endeca stuff works by just dumping Mark and loading it in the way it works now, but we'll see. I'm going to engage in a little bit of idle speculation. I want to know how many people in this room remember Coherent as an operating system. Does it see? How many? Bill, wonderful, and Dave. Okay. So two people, right? Okay, do you remember Xenix, you know, that kind of thing? Do you remember BSD OS or 386BSD or any sort of little tiny operating systems that all ran on PCs? They don't exist anymore. These guys went out of business 1 year after they put that ad up, that big full-page ad in like PC World or something, I don't know. And my sort of brazen speculation at this point is that within 10 years, we will see something similar happening in the ILS market. It simply is something which is exerting that sort of pressure downward. Don't applaud me. I'm not doing it. I just think it's a natural evolutionary thing. That's all that my slides are. I don't know if we want to ask questions later or do them now. Do you care?
Yeah, let's do some questions later.
Do you have any questions for me? Not at all.
We can do a panel.
Or we can do a panel later. Okay, well, we'll just do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we'll do the old AV swap thing. Apologies, folks. Because I might want to do some live demo or something like that if we have time. And if not, hey, no big deal. You can just listen to my mellifluous voice. I'll take requests. All right, and the ever-popular, will we detect a signal? Ah. Woo! I love technology when it works. So my job in talking with John earlier, we're figuring out what we're going to talk about, and I'm supposed to talk a little bit more about the present and sort of the near future with Conifer, and maybe a little bit further out as well, so... we are definitely guinea pigs. There are a lot of people that we know are sitting back and watching and waiting to see whether this is going to fly or not for us in an academic environment. So we know there's a lot of eyes out there. We're actually happy to be in that position because it helps motivate and push us forward as well. I was looking on Flickr for some CC licensed photos of guinea pigs that were jumping through flaming hoops and stuff like that. That was for UPEI's sake, but there are none. There's actually a lot of barbecued guinea pigs. I did not know that was a cuisine, so learning lots of things. We've been through a number of roller coasters, so you know, adopting the karma mechanisms. Fairly early on, we thought, hey, you know what? This is going to cost some money to do it right. Let's go search out some sources of funds, and there are some big pots of funds out there for sort of provincial infrastructure initiatives and things along those lines, which looked really, really promising and then kind of just let us down. We've had contractors come on when back at the Vail Consortium on open source library systems back in February. It was around the same time that as the project manager I'd said, you know what, we're not making as much progress as we should be given the percentages of time that we've been allotted to work on this project. We need to bring in some dedicated resource to kind of keep this going. So we got the okay to get some contractors, which is great, except that was around February. We started looking for contractors, located some fairly quickly. Then it took about 3, 4, 5 months to kind of work through the bureaucracy, which is the minus-minus there, to get some hired. And one of them kind of decided after we got him hired that he really liked his vacation time and kind of liked his weekends, so he kind of pulled back. So that was a little bit of a, you know, leisure time. Nobody's got time to sit back and relax and, you know, play games and read books and stuff like that. We've got work to do, but... we brought some students on full-time for the summer. Equinox actually hired one through the Equinox Summer of Code program. We had applied through the Google Summer of Code program to try and get a position funded, and Google turned us down, but Equinox picked it up. So that was great to have full-time people for 4 months getting hands-on experience. UPEI was a real boost to us. I mean, I took a week of vacation time to help out with the migration, and just working with that team of people and the can-do attitude and getting things done made a huge difference, I think, for all of us to see it can be done. And, you know, it gave me a good sort of test spot to make sure that things would actually work. And, you know, well, good. So then the contractors came back on board. We actually got them signed. One of the contractors, Graham Fossett, works full-time for University of Windsor, so he actually works for Laurentian in his part-time. That was one of the big paperwork things. And our partners started stepping up. So the relationship with Algoma University College and the Northern School of Medicine was that they were part of the Laurentian Consortium. So a little bit of background on the Laurentian Consortium. And I was here at Access last year and gave a 5-minute lightning talk about Conifer. So this isn't the first time you've heard it here. And, you know, Access credentials, this is my third time at Access, as Access 2006 was my first time. And that gave me hope for the future of libraries and technology. Or else I probably would have slit my wrists or found a different job. So thank you all for keeping me here. The first one to come on board to move from being a Laurentian consortial partner in our existing mythical beast system was Algoma University College. When they split off as Algoma University, I mean, de facto, we had to bring them up to the same level of membership in Conifer as the rest of the universities, because that's only fair. But Ken Herndon, who's the library director at Algoma, also wanted to contribute to the project. So he is posted an e-resources librarian position with the intention of making that position devoted to Conifer and Evergreen work, at least for the first year while we're getting up and rolling. And we're actually in the process of doing the hiring now, going through the hiring phase. So that person should be in place in January. So that'll be a really nice boost to the project. And for the Northern School of Medicine, they're running through the, I guess, the end of their initial funding, seed funding phase. They have some funds available. They wanted to go from the position of being not a leech on the Laurentian system, but a partner that basically is thankful to be there, but not having a whole lot of say over how things done, to being in a position of more responsibility and more control. They actually went to UPEI, did a site visit to evaluate how things were going there, and said, yes, we can work within a consortial system to make custom modifications to our use of Evergreen within Conifer to meet our needs for the exciting new services that we want to produce. So we'll step up to the table and we will fund one of the contractors fully. So we don't actually have papers signed yet, but Michael is in the room and he actually has experience with EDI going back to when he was 16 years old writing EDI translators in BASIC. So we thought he'd be a good person to have working on the acquisitions EDI part of the system. So that's the next contractors plus plus. That's a great part of the story. So we're looking forward to getting rolling with that. The Windsor strike, that really sucked because that basically took about 3 weeks out of our schedule for where we're looking at getting our cross-site usability teams up and running and doing evaluations. So now that they're getting back on track, we can actually start talking a little bit more. It's hard to talk to people via email when they're on a picket line. Access 2008, obviously, this has been amazing. You know, the work that was done at Hackfest and a lot of the talks and just talking with people in hallways and, you know, helping a few people get their own Evergreen installs working. There's obviously there's a community that's building up around this, and that's really important to us because, you know, we don't want to be the only academic. Well, we've got UPEI, but we don't want to be the only small two sort of academic Evergreen installs out there. We want a large community of people contributing and building that we can share with. So this has been really fantastic. And I've got a baby that's expected in middle of December, which as a project manager, that's a really negative thing because I'm going to disappear. But there's so many more positives to that that I guess it outweighs things. So if you want to know, you know, as a project manager, I have to talk about these things. I should also say July 2007 was when we kicked things off. And at the time, I'd said, we need a project manager for this project. Because I had, you know, some product planning experience back when I was with IBM. And I said, it really shouldn't be me because I want to be kind of going full-time on the code and getting things done. And so we searched for a project manager for a month or two, and then I was anointed as the project manager. So I get to wear a couple of hats. So anyways, as a project manager, I have to talk about these things. How many resources are we actually committing to this? This is a quasi three-dimensional thing. The on paper is the front, the blue line. The blue line here will show you that we have, theoretically, around 3 full-time people that'll be ramped up on board. But realistically, we're almost flat, going from about a half person up to 1 and 1.5 people full-time on this. So when you put all of our time together, and that's including contractors and students, et cetera, it's not a lot. It's really not a lot, and that is definitely a problem, definitely a risk, but we are doing what we can with the resources that we have. What do we have in terms of hardware? Back in February, we finally managed to get our second set of hardware. Our first set of hardware came from Dell, and they were absolutely resisting doing anything to help us get our RAID controllers working under Debian, which is Debian and Ubuntu are basically the de facto Linux distributions that you want to use with Evergreen. So we said, thank you very much. Well, you can take your $30,000 worth of hardware and, well, don't shove it, but give us a refund. So we've got HP servers now that have been working extremely well. The configuration that we've got are 3 application servers. These were named by the folks at Guelph, so they're apparently astronomy fans. Comet Dwarf and Starburst. You know, pretty pretty reasonable machines. I would have loved to have had a machine like this. 10 years ago, that probably would have cost 10 times as much. And we've got them connecting to database servers. So right now, we've got them configured in such a way that we've got one stable trunk version, which basically stays the same for weeks at a time, so that in theory we can have testers go to it and not have a total change in user experience, and we'll know that it's not totally broken. We've got Dwarf, which is going to be the trunk machine, so that's kind of updated on a daily or semi-daily basis to have the latest bleeding edge code. And then Starburst is the acquisitions branch. So there's an entirely separate branch of code, which, as we're working on finalizing the 1.4 release of Evergreen, we haven't been doing a whole lot with the acquisitions side of things. So we're not touching that very much at this point. So a lot of the action is happening on Comet and Dwarf these days. And the database servers don't have enough RAM to do Evergreen justice. Evergreen uses PostgreSQL and the full-text search within Postgres to run. With our 3.7 million bibs, we're looking at about probably 40 to 50 gigabytes of full-text search indexes. Ideally, you don't really want to hit disk when you're dealing with doing searches on databases. So it'd be really great to have all of this loaded in RAM. We might be looking at, when we go into production, something more like 48 gigabytes of RAM or something for these servers, which, that's the expensive part, but in comparison to some of the proprietary hardware that you're forced to use, or until recently have been forced to use with library systems, that's a drop in the bucket. And we have to do the testing to figure out what we're going to do. So we've got a total sort of projected set of costs to go live, which is coming around $200,000 before the migration and support and bibliographic deduping services that we are going to be acquiring from or buying from Equinox. There's a question, there was a thought about, could we do the migration ourselves? I helped out with the UPI migration. I know the Mythical Beast part of things pretty well. It would save us a whole lot of money if I was to just kind of go full force on that. But that would also mean investing a whole lot of time and learning sort of a one-time skill that doesn't repay us in the end, as opposed to spending what time I do have available on adding capabilities to Evergreen. So the cost is not... So amongst our consortial members, there's a varying opinion about the costs for the quotes that we have from Equinox. So I'm not allowed to talk directly about the numbers from Equinox, but I can give some comparisons. Say the cost for migration from Equinox is less than double, and this is for the entire Conifer consortium, is less than double the cost from our current Mythical Beast vendor, the quote that we had, to move from our Mythical Beast on the outdated Deck Alpha hardware that you can no longer buy new pieces for, to the same Mythical Beast system on Linux commodity hardware. So not really a migration. It's a migration from one operating system to another, but you'd kind of think that your vendor would want to keep you on the same system and maybe give you a good deal. So from my perspective, the costs that we're getting, or that the quotes that we're getting, are very, very reasonable. Same sort of thing on the support side of things. Now, there are other members of the consortium who see that as, they're a little bit surprised at the charges. So I think we're still kind of coming to a middle ground on that. But all told, $200,000 is not a huge amount of investment for a four university plus medical school system plus 3.7 million bibs, if you charge things that way. It's almost nothing. Especially if you compare it to the $500,000, I think, budget that OLE has for having people getting together to meet and design specs. It seems like that would be really nice to have that money doing something real. But sorry, I'm getting recorded. I'm not making friends. So our funding models, I talked about this with John earlier. I'm like, hey, we should probably have a slide about our funding models. Well, we don't really have models for funding all that much. We have sort of a couple of pots of funds that we're pulling from. So Art Rhino, as you know, is a person who is extremely in demand. He's got incredible skills, and he's been a workhorse for Knowledge Ontario over the last few years. So I guess he was director of Knowledge Ontario, for about a year, and effectively wasn't doing any work for Windsor at all while he's there, while he was doing it in his spare time, I suppose. So we got some money back from Knowledge Ontario that we could then contribute towards contractors. So that's cool. At Laurentian, we're just charging any additional funds to our library existing library system budgets and hardware budgets. I mean, the amount that we need for the servers at this point is just a percentage, so it's not huge. And then there's the percentage model for the existing employees like John and like Kathy at Windsor and Art at Windsor and myself, which isn't working all that well. When I heard that we were getting 50% of John's time back in 2007, I said, that's great. I want the 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. time. You guys can have them after that. But Jeff told me, this time around, that he's got them during the day, so it kind of sucks. I talked about the external funding and how that didn't work. And we are still working towards the sort of real model that we're going to use for cost sharing and the migration costs, et cetera. There's a nice TUG model out there, the Tri-University group that Guelph and Waterloo and I think Wilfrid Laurier are using that we might be able to just build on. Basically an entry pay-to-play plus then some sort of metrics for the percentage of use of the system that you're using. So, but that's to be decided. So how about this? Since you know, most of the development isn't actually coming from me, and our contractors have just been kind of getting up to speed. Most of the development is still being done by Equinox. Bill Erickson and Mike Rylander, many of you probably know those guys from Access or Code for Lib past, are still carrying the burden, the heavy burden of most of the development duties. So we owe them a debt of gratitude. But by the same token, I mean, this is a good kind of symbiosis, not the kind where, you know, somebody just pulls blood from, you know, a fish or something like that. The cross-pollination is working out well because they have real customers who are dedicated to actually putting this into production, who have real needs that need to be met, that they can check with and confer with and go back and forth with on iterations of requirements and actual development. So I think it's been good for Equinox as well. It probably can't hurt to have Conifer out there as a project that they can point to say, well, these people are doing it, maybe you should consider it as well. Certainly talking with some of the other academics around here, it sounds like their administration are more seriously considering Evergreen at this point. And that's good for us. So everybody's happy, right? So talking about, you know, okay, so we've had this very little sort of amount of time to contribute. Has Conifer really made a difference to the Evergreen project? So this is a visualization of the number of commits, which is a really gross way of measuring a contribution to a project, because there are all kinds of other contributions like documentation, like bug reporting, etc. But just strictly on commits, if you look at the totals, I'm the light blue guy, and I'm coming in at around almost a quarter of the commits since I was added as a developer or a committer back in September 2007. So now that reflects two things. One, it reflects me passing patches that our students have created at Laurentian and putting those into the system. And one of the other things is that if you compare, say, Bill Erickson's commits to mine, you'll see Bill is committing like 50 or 100 lines of code at once that are doing something entirely new. My commits are usually I'm fixing something that's only slightly broken, or fixing a typo, or doing internationalization stuff, which isn't huge in comparison. So I'm not going to be too self-deprecating, but there is a definite qualitative difference between Mike and Bill's commits and mine. That being said, rounding off corners is an important part of a project too. So that's been good. Are we there yet? We're getting really close in terms of time. I'm saying April because we don't really want to do a whole lot of last-minute changes to the code. But, you know, given that we started in July 2007, we had an initial tentative we'd really like to try and migrate in May 2008 if things are there. They definitely weren't there. We could see they weren't going to be there at that time. So we shifted out to April 2009. So we've been able to find lots of things to do to fill in the time until then. Work that might not be on the critical path that I've been involved with are things like going out on behalf of the Eiffel Foss project to Armenia to lead a workshop on evergreen installation and configuration for the Eiffel pilot projects out there, places like Zimbabwe, Armenia, and Georgia, who are interested in evergreen and COA. And there is a COA presenter there as well. That doesn't necessarily help the Conifer project get to our May 2009 target, but as a long-term measure, I think it's really important to start building this greater base of community and contributions, potential contributors that are out there. So as a long-term thing, I think it's fairly easily justified. Same sort of thing for VMware server images, except when the broken images are uploaded and you find out about it in Hackfest. So that's fixed now. Documentation, contributions along those lines. So, all right, so we have about 20 minutes, I think. So we've got a couple of options what we could do. We could look at sort of what the evergreen roadmaps are for delivery of various features. We could look at, maybe take a quick look at some of the, as of today, where some of these features are and how they actually look in a browser or something like that. Got a couple of different options what we could do. Or we could cut off and, talk. But anyone feel? I'm just going to keep on going on with slides. Or I could switch over to the Access 2008 IRC channel and get sort of real-time feedback on how things have been going. Yeah, maybe I'll avoid that. I'll wait until later. So I've got a destination to a big mountain in the background. So, so in September 2008, we're going to release the internationalization release of Evergreen 1.4. Okay, soon we're going to release it. We've actually been focusing on that pretty hard for the last week or two. Lots of little edges left to fix. So our very tiny check marks and X's. The first one, Conify. Let's see if I can bring that up real quick. Yeah, there we go. Conify. So if you've seen Evergreen before, you might have seen these CGI bin scripts that are really brittle and really web 0.5. So Mike Rylander kind of led the way with the Dojo JavaScript toolkit to build these configuration interfaces that are actually kind of nice. I actually can look at this and fairly quickly figure out what I need to do with it for tags. So simple things like hours of operation and changing addresses. And if you want to add a new member to the consortium, it's very easy to click on one of these beasties and add a new child and do all that stuff, right? It's pretty cool. And all of these all of these labels are translatable. Now we're still working on getting the translation widget to appear in the right spot the first time, but you can actually choose which locale you want to put it in, add the translation that gets stored in the database. So they're doing some pretty thorough work there. So that is coming along really well. Easier administration of circulation rules. All of the circulation rules, what UPI is running and what Georgia Pines is running, the circulation rules are all written in JavaScript, I think, and they sit server-side and they're translated as server-side JavaScript, which is great from one perspective. You can do almost whatever you want with it. But on the other hand, it can be a little bit unwieldy to deal with. So there's a more traditional set of circulation rules that are going into the database, and there will be another kind of Conify-type widget sitting on top of that that'll give you the matrix of item type and location and user type, those sort of combinations that you're probably familiar with if you use the Mythical Beast or probably any other library system. So you get a nice GUI for it. The Z3950 targets, right now you're limited to searching just a single Z3950 target at once. I actually said Z3950, cool. I've been spending too much time with the Americans. Ah, man, I knew there was something I didn't like about that guy. Otherwise, he's cool. But yeah, you'll be able to search against multiple Z3950 servers in 1.4. SRU support was added, and we knew that you could put a Z3950 translator on top of that, so you could actually look up, do Z3950 lookups against the Evergreen catalog. I actually did the extra, half day's work to figure out what the configuration was required and the few slight changes that were needed and documented all that. And you can actually do Z3950 searches against Evergreen now. It's a little bit limited. You get MarkXML only back, which might not work for every one of your clients, but it's definitely a huge step in the right direction for making legacy brittle protocols actually work. So, yay. Internationalization support is mostly there. The new interfaces like Conify and Vandalay, we're in the progress of process of adding that. And like I said, there are very few of us probably that really deeply care about that anyways. So, hey, University of Ottawa. The Mark importer and exporter. If you've used Evergreen, you'll know, well, at least the previous versions of Evergreen, you'd know that to get records into Evergreen is not easy. Well, it's easy if you like command lines and scripts and chaining a whole lot of things together. But for normal humans, not very easy. So Bill's been working on building this, just an importer interface. So let's see, we've got an existing queue, so let's use that, sure. And let's find myself some records. And we'll see whether the live demo works. This is just running on my laptop, by the way. So you don't need to have a machine with 48 gigabytes of RAM or whatever and separate servers and all that stuff. You can actually run it fairly easily on a 1 gigabyte laptop. All right. Pardon me? Yeah, that is a little bit of a problem. I need to get it working on my cell phone and then I'll be set. So... let's see, I'll be a little bit crazy and see if these test records actually work and put them into open source. They're actually legal legal documents from, I forget which library it is, but they've got lots of good Hebrew characters in it, so it's kind of fun for testing purposes. So we can see the previous records that were in here, and... we're still working out a few of the bugs in the Dojo kind of interface, so let's see if I can find our scroll bar. No, I don't think I can. Ah, boo. Okay. Well, the records that you see here are ones that I imported before, so I'll show you quickly how you can import them. And obviously there's... oh, hey, that's what I could do. Cool little pop-up. Go full screen so I can actually see the done. Get rid of some... columns, because what do we care who the publisher is? Right, there we go. Now I've got a scroll bar. So now, theoretically, I should have seen. Let's see, refresh this beastie. Pulling this live from the database on my laptop, so if it doesn't work, it's my fault. Yeah, it's my fault. Well, I'll add a few records in, import them, and then these will be added into the actual database. So they stay in sort of a queue for a little while, and then you can actually import them. It's doing some pretty advanced things right now, like detecting collisions on your title control number identifiers. You can do some fairly advanced work on defining the attributes based on either full XPath against your MarkXML or your standard kind of mark tag and subfield things to say, here's what my title of work is. So this is really coming along well, too, so I'm very happy about that. And credit card payment for fines, the back end is there, but there's no front end as of yet for that. So people will actually be able to pay their fines over the web, probably in 2.0 timeframe, which is cool. So winter 2008, 2009 are when we're getting the big things that we really, really care about, because searching for books isn't all that important. Acquisitions, serials, and academic reserves. And acquisitions is coming along quite well. Serials, that's what one of the contractors is for, to provide the serials user interface. The back-end pieces are, a lot of the pieces are there. David Fiander is in the room, and he's inherited, pardon me? Fiander, sorry. he inherited the fun job of hardcore Mark format for holdings data parsing from me, because I was dragging my tail on it. So thank you, David. and Michael is going to pick up the EDI work. So lots of good stuff there. So our real process for rolling this out is, now that we have servers in place, now that Windsor is coming back from being on strike, We can actually get our cross-university groups together to look at functional areas and usability, do testing, provide feedback, change, develop, iterate, and go over and over and over again. One other thing is we've got a co-op position for a Seneca tech writer planned for January through April as well. So we're trying to bring our own documentation contributions to the table as well. So that's really probably good enough. I don't think there's too many other exciting things to talk about at that point. So, oh yeah, we did say that we'd answer the question, should you do this or should you consider it? And, you know, if committing yourself to migrating to something a few years in the future where the pieces aren't built yet is what you mean by this, then yeah, certainly. If you've got hardware that's dying and you've got to move to something else anyways, or your ILS has an end of life in place, if you're willing to accept risk for a return on the investment of the time that you're putting in and the resources that you're putting in, because that's really what we see. You know, as John said, we don't care all that much about the ILS for the basic functionality. What we care about it is the ability to have an open interface for integration with all the other services that our library wants to provide. And that's a huge part of the reason for choosing Evergreen. We've got this whole whole systems model of not having to have three people learning slightly different things to do or slightly different ways to do the same thing just because we've got different ILSs. Once we get to Conifer, we'll have, you know, one person will be able to load all the bib records the next time that CRKN buys a huge we participate in a CRKN purchase. They can load it once. We can have a single process for Laurentian, McMaster, Windsor, Algoma, Northern School of Medicine for loading our records into Amicus, into OCLC, rather than everybody figuring out their own way of doing it. So there's definitely some savings in the long term for human resources that we're, you know, currently duplicating or triplicating now, we can put those human resources to better use on more advanced services in the future. Or if you're like, you know, a lot of places, you can wait and see what happens in May 2009, and then you can decide whether you want to join us there. So, yeah. So do you want to try and take some questions now? If there are questions? Sure, Andrew.